You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, welcome to the broadcast. This is Lee Baucom, and we're today talking about how to save your marriage, and specifically, why connection is so important in a relationship, and not only that, but how to heal it when the relationship has become broken. Now, the reason this is so important is because that, to me, is the heart of what happens when a marriage gets into trouble. It's about disconnection, and the problem is most people don't understand how powerful that is in a relationship. Not only that, most people don't realize how significant that is in terms of marriage crisis. In fact, what I would say, I would theorize that almost 100% of the problems that we have in relationships, in marital relationships, is due to this disconnection. There are some other pieces. There are some other possibilities that are going to contribute to that. But in terms of the marriage crisis, this is caused by the disconnection in a relationship. There are other pieces that we've talked about how you might grow stagnant with yourself, and that's a topic that we'll cover in more details in other podcasts, and how to begin to grow yourself. In fact, I would say that there are actually three pieces that are important to saving a marriage, not how a marriage gets into crisis, but saving a marriage, and the other two are to change yourself, to grow, to develop, to become more of who you are, to step to a higher place, and to create a new path. Create a new path for the relationship, to show a new way that the relationship could be. But the number one is about rebuilding connection, because disconnection is where relationships get into trouble. The disconnection is exacerbated when we don't have the resources to grow and when we don't know where we're growing to. But the beginning point of that, the beginning point of the crisis, is about disconnection. So just for a minute, let me tell you about a couple that I saw, and I'm just going to call them Jill and Steve. Jill and Steve are very similar to lots of other couples that I've seen. Both were very deeply hurt, and they were angry with each other. Now, here's the important thing. Neither one felt loved or cared for, and both felt that deep disconnection. There was a difference, though. Jill wanted to do something about it. So she called me and she said, hey, can we come in? Can I bring Steve in and let's talk? And I started talking a bit and found that Steve at this point did not want to do anything. Steve was not wanting to work on the marriage. Steve had given up hope. And so I suggested that she not drag Steve in. The reason is because I've watched what happens in marriage therapy. And in marriage therapy, when somebody is resistant to coming into the office, the chances of making progress are very low. Marriage therapy itself doesn't have a great level of success. I've talked about this before. The statistics are pretty overwhelming. Only about 50% of couples who go to therapy stay married. Now, that's the same as the general population. And only 15 to 20% of people who go to therapy report that there is any progress, any positive progress. And so one of the contributing factors of this, just one, but one of them is that often in marital therapy, one person wants to be there and the other doesn't. And that was the case with Jill and Steve. And so I suggested that Jill not drag Steve into therapy. Well, she did. They came to their appointment, and just as I suspected, he made it through exactly one session of therapy. He said, "What's the use? I don't see anything changing." Now, what I did notice was the next piece. He said, "But if Jill wants to continue, that's fine with me. I don't care." Now, here's the piece that's important. That, to me, was an opening. He was not giving up the whole process. He was giving up his part of the process and turning it over to Jill and saying, "Hey, if you want to do something about it, fine, I don't care." That was an opening. It wasn't saying, "Fine, that will help." It wasn't giving any hope that was overt, but it was a small opening. And so Jill and I scheduled a session, and that session led to several other sessions where I coached Jill on how to understand the relationship differently, where I helped her see how relationships can come back from the ashes, how they can kind of rise like the phoenix out of the ashes that seems like it's a lost cause, how it can actually become stronger in that rebirth. And so we talked about some ways that she could re-understand the relationship. You remember, I often talk about the paradigm shift, and a paradigm shift of understanding your spouse, but also of understanding the nature of the relationship. If you're not familiar with that, you can find a lot of information on that in my Save the Marriage system at SaveTheMarriage.com. But right now, what we want to focus on is the fact that that's just the case, that we all have a paradigm of how we understand the other person and how we understand the relationship. And in order for there to be a change, we have to get to the place where we can understand things a bit differently. And so I talked to Jill about that, and I gave her some new ways of understanding. And then I gave her some more advice that I want to talk about here. It really boiled down to four pieces of theoretical advice and then some specifics. The first thing I wanted her to know is that humans are built for connection. We are wired. Our brain is wired for that connection. As mammals, we are pack creatures. But unlike a lot of other mammals, we are more tied into having a single person. In fact, I would theorize, and others have theorized, that of all the mammals, of all the population on the earth, of living things, we probably have the greatest need for connection and how it feeds us emotionally. And here's why. Can you think of another species that can sit back and talk about how their relationship is going? Can you think of another one that can think about that in terms of, hey, is that person upset with me? What did I do wrong? You know, that those are the thoughts that we all have in our heads. I don't think the dogs have that. I don't think even the apes have that. I don't think there's the capacity for that language that we have as humans to dissect a relationship and think about what's wrong with our relationship. And so we have this great need for connection. And that great need for connection is best fostered in a marital relationship where two people say, you know what, we're going to stick through this no matter what. We are deeply connected and connected the rest of our lives. That tells you how deeply our need for connection is. It's wired into our DNA. It's in our brain. It's how our brain is wired up. It's how our body is wired up. Think about when we touch somebody and it releases that hormone oxytocin. The same thing happens when we talk with somebody and have this nice, warm conversation. And so that connection is built into us. But when the connection is not there, the hurt is so deep that it often comes out as anger. In fact, anger is a secondary emotion, always to hurt, threat, fear. Those three pieces, the hurt, threat, fear triangle, is what triggers us in an outward response to anger. But anger is the secondary piece to that. It's really deep hurt that is what's behind that anger when there is a marital crisis. And that deep hurt is because of the desire for connection that's not happening, the longing for the connection that we're not getting. So the first thing I said to Jill is that humans are built for connection. Both of she and Steve are built for connection. And because of that disconnection, there's so much pain, which led to my second point with her. When people are hurt, they resist connection because they fear the hurt. See, people are desperate for that connection, but they're also desperate to not feel the pain anymore. It's also in our wiring. We avoid pain. And when we avoid pain, we begin to distance ourselves from whatever it is that we perceive as creating that pain. And so in a relationship where you feel like that disconnection with the other person has led to pain, you move away and then you reject attempts at reconnection because you don't want to get hurt again. And so you reject those chances to reconnect, balancing out the desire for connection with the fear of the pain of disconnection. And as you reject them, at least initially, it makes it hard to build in that connection again. It's hard to rebuild that connection. So the second point was, when people are hurt, they resist connection because they fear the hurt, not because they don't want to connect, but because they fear the hurt. And so they always reject the connection, at least initially. My third point with Jill was this. Attempts at connection should start slowly, be low-key, and cannot come from your own desperation to connect. Those three pieces are pivotal. Number one, start slowly. Number two, be low-key. And three, don't come from your own place of desperation. You see, here's the interesting thing. A relationship is made up of two people who are desperate for that connection. And so when there's a marriage crisis, they're stuck in a quagmire because they're both desperate for it, but fearing the pain of it. And so they both back away and neither's ready to reach out. But when you begin to get beyond that, when you get beyond the pain for one person even doing that, the change is possible if that person begins the process with those three pieces slowly. The reason is because if there's been disconnection, suddenly jumping in will feel very alien to the other person. And second, it's unsustainable, right? If you suddenly start doing everything to prove your connection, it will overwhelm the process. It will tip the scales, partly because it will come from your desperation, and desperation never feels like genuine connection. And partly because it's such a change from the norm, it's just overwhelming to the person. It's kind of like you have to get below the radar so their early warning detection system that fends it off doesn't get kicked up. So then it has to be low-key. No grand gestures, right? No taking them on the round-the-world trip or the huge diamond ring or a dozen roses every day or some of those big things we try to do, the new car, the new house, the whatever. Some of those grand gestures are also overwhelming. Low key is much better because connection, true connection, day-to-day connection is built on slowly. Think back to the beginning of your relationship. It started slowly, right? It built on itself. So a little connection led to more connection. And your attempts at connection led to attempts at connection by this other person. And it built on itself. And that's the way we rebuild connection. We rebuild connection by slowly adding pieces in from a low-key place. It doesn't have to be from 0 to 60, right? 0 to 5, 0 to 10, 0 to 15, then 15 to 20, 25, and you build up until the reconnection is there. So the thing that has to be very carefully monitored for yourself is that you're not coming from desperation. You might feel desperate, but don't act from that point. Because when we come from desperation, A, it comes out as neediness, right? And overwhelms the other person, and they feel the distance. It doesn't feel like connection. It feels like I need you, not I want you. That's another point we'll talk about in another podcast. But there's a big separation between letting someone know that you want them in your life versus that you need them and you're desperate. So when it comes from desperation, it breeds that peace. When it comes from desperation, it also feels like it has nothing to do with the connection and everything to do with you. Connection is what we're moving from. That feeling of being deeply connected with someone else. Okay, so the third point was attempts at connection should start A, slowly, B, be low key, and C, cannot come from your own place of desperation. You have to move beyond that. You have to watch the radar system and fly below it in order to build up to it. Okay, so the fourth point I shared with her is because we want connection, once the ice melts, reconnection can happen very quickly. The deep hurt that comes out as anger can make it appear that it's impossible to get close to the other person. But once the reconnection starts, the icy cold can quickly become warm and even more quickly become a heated connection. This used to surprise me. I used to be shocked by how quickly it could happen. I couldn't understand why angry relationships could turn around so quickly until I realized that we are so needing connection that when we clear out that anger, when it turns to hurt that's addressed, then suddenly it falls away because what was causing the anger, the underlying hurt, is addressed and healed, and suddenly the relationship takes off. Which is my point of all of this? When we can move beyond our hurt and pain and reach out and work on the connection, we can heal the connection. We can heal the disconnection and create the reconnection. Because of our innate need for that connection, once we get rid of that barrier, we come together quickly. The other day, I was playing with a couple of magnets. You know, have you ever played with magnets? And this is what made me think of this whole piece. Is when you pull them apart, you know, you can feel that tug when they're close together, and then suddenly the tug kind of gives away, and they just move apart. Well, that's kind of like what happens in our relationship. When we become disconnected, the tug gets less and less. But what really happens is a barrier is placed in the way. When you remove that barrier, the closer the magnets get, the more the attraction pulls until they click together with an accelerating force, and that's what happens in a relationship. It accelerates exponentially. Not at a single pace, but exponentially it pulls together because once you start getting to that place, you get to the need, the attraction that's underlying that, that we all have for connection. So a couple of things that people have asked me is, okay, so how do I nurture that connection in ways that are slow, low key, and not from my point of desperation? And so I've come up with a few strategies and I want to share them with you. The first one is what I call one-way communication. A one-way communication is one that doesn't require a response on the other part of the other person. In other words, you're not saying, hey, tell me what's going on. You're not trying to have a deep conversation. You're not doing anything but letting them know that you've been thinking about them, that they're in your heart, that they're in your thoughts. And so, for instance, a one-way communication is a one-way text. And a one-way text would look like this. Hey, I was thinking about you today, hoping everything's going well, period. No question mark. If you put a question mark anywhere in there, or it requires a response from the other person, it is not a one-way communication. And remember this, one-way communications are not meant to elicit a response. They are reach outs to the other person. If you're trying to elicit a response, you know that you're coming from your desperation. What could be more low-key and starting slowly than sending a text saying, hey, was thinking about you, hoping things are going well, hope your day is good, something like that. When there's a separation, sometimes people find that they can send that in the morning. Hey, I woke up just thinking about you, hope everything's going well, have a good day, period. End of the day, hey, hope your day went well. Now, here's the thing. Desperation does not mean that you send a one-way text every 5 minutes throughout the day. It may mean that you send one every couple of days, maybe one a day, maybe two a day. Certainly, even when you're building in that connection, no more than three a day. This is not a desperation texting, right? It's what you do to slowly let the person know that you're still thinking about them with warm thoughts. So some people say, well, it didn't work. You know, I tried that one-way text and it didn't work. They didn't respond, which is precisely why I'm saying again to you, it is not about getting a response from the other person. It is about providing a connection from you to the other person. That's low key. A one-way email might be you find a link to an article and you send that. Hey, I knew you're interested in this. Thought you might want to see it. Now, let me be clear that you're not sending a link to a blog post on my blog about how to save your marriage, and you're not sending some information about how they need to fix themselves or how they need to solve their issues. It's about, you know, something they're interested in. They're getting ready for a marathon, so you send them something on running. They like to fish, so you send them an article on that. They like to decorate the house, so you send them something you see on that. So there are lots of ways you could do that, but it's sending a link just saying, hey, this looked interesting, thought it might be something you'd be interested in. No questions, no question mark again. The ultimate one-way communication is sending a card. A card where you go to the store and you buy the card and you put their address on it and you mail it to them. The reason that's the ultimate is because a text, people might still respond to it. An email, they might still feel the need to respond to it. But a card, there's nothing they can do to respond. It's just a card. And so sending those one-way communications is a way of beginning to warm that up. That's a starting point. It's not a long-term strategy. It's a short-term starting point strategy. Let's talk about a low-key way of rebuilding physical connection, because physical connection leads to emotional connection. I'm not talking about suddenly going from not having had sex for 3 months or 2 years or 10 years or 20 years. But how do you break the ice? I would suggest you walk by and pat on the shoulder or the arm or on the back, just lightly, and that's a starting point. Reaching out and squeezing a hand is a starting point. A quick hug is a starting point. You want to start the physical reconnection slow, low-key, in ways that don't send off the alarm bells. Because when you try to pull someone close and hold them tight and get them to kiss you back or read something into that, then you're coming from your own desperation. It's to you trying to reach out and show your connection, not trying to get your connection back. That's a very important part of this one-way attempts at spreading that. So let me offer one other way, and that's the invite, the low-key invite. So I might say to somebody, hey, I'm going to go get a cup of coffee. Would you like to come with me? Notice that. I'm just inviting them to tag along. It's not, hey, can we set a date to sit down and talk? It's not, hey, can we have date night? It's not, hey, meet me at the coffee shop. We need to talk. It's this. Hey, I'm going to go do something. Would you like to come along? It's a tag along request, low key. So there are two possibilities. The first one is they say, no, I'd rather not, to which you say, okay, that's fine, with no emotional penalty or response, and you go have coffee. The reason is because this isn't a one-time event. You can always ask again tomorrow or the next day or 3 days from now or next week. So it's not the ultimate point here. It's just an invite to tag along. It might be to go get a cup of coffee. It might be a chance to go to a concert, take a walk in the park, take a bike ride, go to the bookstore, whatever it is. No big deal. Okay? So you offer that as a one way. Let's say they take you up on it. You go and you do not have a relationship talk. You take it very quickly, very lightly. You enjoy each other's company. You try to have a little laughter, some point where the person's going to go, you know what, that was fun, because you're building in that connection. This is not a time for a serious relationship talk. In fact, I would postulate that in any marriage crisis, the last thing you need to be doing is having a long marriage talk. That's not the time for relationship talk. It's the time to enjoy each other's company a little bit. So it's a low-key invite. They can say no, they can say yes. If they say no, you ask again. If they say yes, you have a good time. Now, here's an important part. You have a good time and you cut it short, meaning I had a conversation with someone just the other day that it started out as we'll go get coffee, ended up in a long lunch, and the long lunch turned to relationship talk and it all fell apart. Why? Because she was desperate for that connection, and it seemed to be going well, and so she kept going. Bad mistake. When I was a teenager, I was a magician, did a lot of magic shows, and I learned one basic rule of showmanship. Always leave them wanting more. If I was having a great show, I wanted to end it when it was still going great. Not see how long I could sustain the greatness, but end it when it was going great. If it was not going well, I wanted to end it anyway and get off the stage. But if it was going well, I still wanted to leave them feeling like there was more to see. And it's the same with this. Don't let your desire to continue the connection ruin the connection you had. Going to have a cup of coffee, spending 20, 30, even maybe 45, 50 minutes talking is great. Hey, let's go get some lunch. Probably not. Hey, let's spend the afternoon together. Probably not, if that's not been part of the setup. Remember, you just want to start building the connection, low key, slowly, and not from your point of desperation. Okay, so those are the pieces that are very important for you to remember as you're trying to build the connection. And the big piece you need to remember is that connection can heal very quickly. Once the barrier is out of the way, once the connection begins to grow, it will accelerate exponentially and suddenly you reconnect it. So what about Jill and Steve? I got to tell you, I wasn't particularly hopeful. In fact, I had very little hope. And then about 4 months later, Jill contacted me and she said she wanted to come in and talk with me. I scheduled an appointment thinking that she was going to come in telling me that nothing had worked out. So I went out to my waiting area and there was Jill and Steve sitting shoulder to shoulder on the couch laughing about a magazine article. They looked up, came into my office, and told me a story of how the conversations had melted and the connections had melted the pain and the hurt. Steve told me that at first he was very resistant. He wanted nothing to do with her attempts because he felt like they were just manipulation. But over time, he saw that there was really genuine desire for connection. And he wanted that deep desire for connection. He had that deep desire for connection. He wanted it too. And so he began to return the connection. And that sent them on a recovery path that was exponential in growth. It compounded as each person reached out in connection. So we wrapped up that session talking about some strategies where they could make sure that the disconnection happened again. For the last few years, I've received a card on their anniversary assuring me that they had done just that. You can heal the disconnection because the desire for connection is built into us. You just have to capitalize on that fact and figure out how to do the approach slowly, low-key, and without desperation attached. Okay, now I want to ask you a couple of questions. What would you like to hear about in this podcast? How would you like to address issues? What are the things that are growing on your mind? What are the real issues that are floating around for you? I would love to hear from you at podcast@savethemarriage.com. Just email me podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, @savethemarriage.com. There are no spaces, no underlines in that. podcast@savethemarriage.com. Let me know. Now, understand that I'm not looking for your particular situation. I'm not here to do a therapy session by podcast, but general topics. You know, you might say, gosh, I'm really stuck on this. Boil it down to a question or two questions, and I'll take those and I'll turn them into a podcast. Also, I want to let you know that there are lots of articles on my blog that might be helpful for you. The easiest way to get to my blog is to go to SaveTheMarriageBlog.com. That's SaveTheMarriageBlog.com, straight across, no underlines, no spaces. And that'll get you onto my blog and onto some articles that are going to help you with your marriage. Leave me some comments there. Let me know what you're thinking. Let me know what's going on with you. I want you to know that that's why we're here. We're here to provide the information that's going to help you work to save your marriage. I'm here to help you do that. You can always visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com. And until the next session, until the next episode, this is Lee Balcom, and I'm wishing you the best.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.